Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Good morning. This is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Monday, and we are live here in the Kia Studios. Mike, Bo, and Tiff hanging out with you on what was a probably, for most of you, a rough weekend for Atlanta sports fans. I hope you guys are getting through it, but we'll help you try to get through it together this morning.
Yeah, Tiff, we were just talking about the random probable crossover of Georgia Tech fans having a good Saturday but a bad Sunday, or you know, the random Ole Miss fan that might be a Falcons fan having a good Saturday and a bad Sunday.
Trying to throw in the probably.
Yeah, you know? Well, you know, I think it's easy to say you know, Georgia fans and you know, Georgia fans that are fans of the Falcons as well had a bad weekend, but I'm trying to throw in the good because I know a lot of Alabama fans that are Falcons fans that had a, you know, back and forth weekend as well. So yeah, trying to cover all the good. Atlanta United fans having a phenomenal weekend. So yeah, I think there's some, I think there's some gray area in there, but obviously rough day for the Falcons. Sorry.
Yeah. I feel like I'm dealing with some fans, throughout the Falcon fandom that have really taken off the last couple of years because Georgia's been good and the Falcons haven't. And they expect every game to be a 42-10 game and that there are no hard games when teams don't have good records. And we literally told you all week that, A, the record doesn't matter in these games, and, B, that you know, this is a team that, from what I've heard some stuff through the grapevine, that it was kind of a coup led down there.
Definitely looked like it after the game.
And it was led by the Saints owner going – around the GM and meeting with players. And that's kind of what led to the firing of Dennis Allen. You heard it in Alvin Kamara's comments after the game last week against Carolina. And so the players were inspired to go out there and win a game for their guy because that's the guy they wanted, not the other guy. Now, I don't know if that guy, hopefully, you know, I'm not a big fan of Darren Rizzi. I think he's a little bit of a little bit much for me, let's put it that way. You know, especially after the garbage he pulled after the game last year when they were classless and he was the leader of the classless, him and Jameis. But I digress. The fact of the matter is they came out and jumped on you early and you had to withstand the storm because you started slow offensively and defensively. And you did. But all of that said, we talk all the time about all three facets winning games. And you brought... You didn't bring all three facets for all four quarters, and one of the facets of the game I don't think ever showed up, and that was the kicking game. Because 1-for-4 with a block kick, you leave 9 points on the field, and you lose by a field goal. That's unacceptable.
All right. It was a tough break. I don't know if you want to put it all on kicking. I know it was unacceptable. You can look at it that way, but he has a rough outing, but obviously it's a team thing, right?
Well,
There's a lot of other areas that...
Yeah, it was a team thing, but the kicking is, I think it's somewhere around 8 for the last 15 from your place kicker, who makes good money for a kicker. That needs to be cleaned up. There's no way around that. I'm not trying to call one person out for anything, because one of those is not really on him when you get a guy that gets up and blocks it, but you're leaving points on the field, and it's now costing you games. So that is unacceptable. That you cannot be a playoff team and fell at one facet of the game, and you have not been good enough there this year, and that is just the truth of it. I'm not blaming anyone. I'm telling you what is happening, and that is what is happening.
Yeah, it was obviously rough, and you know, not to go, you know, like Bo and go all Debo Samuel on everybody, but it definitely was a little bit of that out there for sure. And I think honestly, in a lot of different ways, guys, this game is a complete flip of the first time around when you beat the Saints, because you didn't really have much business beating the Saints the first time. You got two non-offensive touchdowns, and your offense couldn't do anything. On the flip side, you got 25 first downs in this one. You got 468 yards of total offense. Your rushing net was 5.7 yards per carry. I mean, you did a lot of good things to be able to deserve this one. Just untimely penalties and a lot of other things that lead, like to your point, the kicking game, lead to you not being successful in this one. So, yeah, I mean, frustration's high, obviously. You gotta try to keep it, between the navigational beacons and realize you still have a pretty good chance at finishing, this division at 5-1. But it just seems like missed opportunities when you talk about a number of games this season. And yesterday definitely falls into that category.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, there is a lot to digest when it comes to the Falcons, but we will continue to do that throughout the show. If we want to uplift your spirits, maybe you'll be happy about Atlanta United's big win when everyone had counted them out over Inter Miami. And this team, what, had a 10% chance to try to get less than that, was it, to try to even make the postseason?
I think going into the final day of the season, on decision day, they had a 10% chance to get in. And all this craziness happened. And then obviously you have to win, four games to be able to make all that happen in such a short amount of time. And, yeah, you did it. You won that last game. You won that play-in game. You won the playoff series. And here we kind of sit. It was just an awesome, it was incredible listening to Mike Conte and Jason Longshore on a Saturday night. Just a great Sunday. I know we'll dive into it throughout the show and hear some sound from them. But like Bo mentioned, that final call here in Jason Longshore, they're all legends. Every single one of them. They're all legends. I'm like, yes. Yes, they are, man. Yes, they are. And Mike Conte, obviously emotional on the call as well. And I think he put it best last week, Bo, when he tweeted out, I need a cigarette. I felt the same way Saturday after that game.
I mean, everyone probably expected Messi to be into the postseason. You expected that squad to be in the postseason. So a huge win for Atlanta United, as well as a huge win for Georgia Tech, who knocked off the number 4 ranked team in the college football playoff rankings, taking out Miami at home over the weekend. And that was one that you were just kind of, if you were watching multiple games, you ran to that one to be like, wait, upset alert. And you kind of love to see the upsets on Saturday this time of year in college football.
Well, you got to give Brent Key all the credit in the world, because Haynes King has been injured for, I think this was really, he went through a bye week, but he was injured the 2 weeks before. And he really was injured this week. He was a game time decision. Pete Thamel from ESPN had tweeted it out Friday, and then he tweeted it out Saturday. Look, he's going to go. But they had to bring Philo in to throw the football. I mean, that was King threw it, but when they needed big yardage, they had to throw Philo in there, and everyone knew what was happening. I mean, Miami, there's no way they didn't know. Okay, well, they've got Philo in, they're throwing the football, because they were throwing passing situations.
Yeah,
and he completed some third and 19s. It was phenomenal from him.
Unreal.
Jamal Haynes played well early, had the big, 65-yard run to start the game.
Yeah.
And Haynes King had some himself, but then they were able to get after Cam Ward. Cam Ward's magic, they held down. They had pressure all day on him. They made him uncomfortable. He had to hold the football. And that was a physical football game. You want to talk about hard hitting? There were some guys getting lit up, including a little bit of dirty play from Miami. So, with the whole the targeting thing was really was a rough thing, because you ripped a guy's helmet off almost, and then his helmet somehow stays on, and you have a spear essentially right at his chest.
I hate that was the end of that call, and I know that's probably not a popular opinion, but the guy, I think it made it worse that his helmet was falling off, and the guy who hit him had nothing to do with it. But you go look at Haynes King's numbers, and he's like a quarterback from a winning team at a service academy. Right, I mean, he rushes for almost 100 yards and goes 6 of 6 through the air for 32. And you're like, dude, what a great performance.
And it was
gritty.
You.
You mentioned it, Jamal Haynes. I keep having to say Justice Haynes, but he's at Alabama. Jamal Haynes has to exit early after only three carries, and I think your backup guy has to leave as well in the first half. So really, you're down to your third string running back at that point, and you're kind of playing a two quarterback system. But just as gritty as it comes from that defense at Georgia Tech and the ability to run the ball up front, I think Brent Key, a signature win once again for him, and he's doing all the right things.
Yeah, Georgia Tech taking that one 28-23. The Bulldogs are on the opposite end of the spectrum. What does their loss mean for them now against Ole Miss when it comes to the college football ranking? We'll get to that later on in the show. But up next, NVS. Those initials probably have scarred some of you guys from the weekend. We'll discuss the Falcons' loss to the Saints up ahead on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Carr now from the pocket on a deep drop. He wants to fire the ball deep, and it is caught. Touchdown, Marquez Valdes-Scantling. And three white shirts were back there, Arch. And Derek Carr dropped in the bucket.
That was Wes Durham and Dave Archer on the call on the Falcons Radio Network. And that was them calling a Marquez Valdes-Scantling touchdown. The two-time Super Bowl winner with Kansas City came in and added a ton a wealth of veteran experience to that Saints roster, who we all were talking about last week, kind of had an overhaul of their receiver room in terms of who would be available, who wasn't available. Scantling caught three passes for 109 yards and two touchdowns in just his second game for the Saints. So
it was almost like Jimmy Lake and company got caught off guard by how good Valdes Scantling is and made some adjustments throughout the second half. Believe that A.J. Terrell was on him a little bit more, but you just got beat a couple of times on throws like that, and that was the story of the game to me, right? That and some of the issues as far as pressure on Kirk Cousins, be it whatever it may, whatever it is up front, yeah. That was the story of the game. It was some of those deep throws, and then obviously, Kirk kind of getting pressured at times, and they run away with it in the end.
Yeah, we talked to Bobby Hebert at halftime. He came in our booth, and Bobby obviously played for the Falcons and the Saints, and he's down there working for WWWL, doing their pre-half and post, and he was like, we just signed this guy off the street. Look at him. He's balling out, talking about MVS, mm-hmm. and it was funny. Yeah, Clark Phillips got beat on the big throw down the sideline with MVS. One of those touchdowns, I don't know, I don't know what our safeties were doing. Justin Simmons. Jesse Bates, they were just, it looks like AJ, the I'm sure that, the guy that writes for a fan blog in his basement is probably saying it was AJ's fault because he saw AJ trailing, but there's no way AJ's going to get there when a guy, he's playing that far off and outside and a guy is on the goal line and he breaks inside like that and you got two safeties sitting there and he runs by both of them, runs in between both of them and catches it. So, those miscommunications have happened a little too much for my liking with two veteran all-pro safeties in Jesse and Justin. And I don't know where it comes from, but you say all that to say you go out and you start the second half and Jesse makes a play immediately knifing up and clipping Alvin Kamara in the backfield, who early in the game was running at success on you. And then Justin Simmons makes a great play as well by knifing in and almost picking off a pass, I think, on the Saints' second drive. But it was one of those deals where they got the ball and the start of the second half, you were able to get them out. But then you go down and you take a long drive and you have to kick a field goal.
Yeah.
When you need a touchdown. And that happened a little bit too often yesterday as well. You know, it's easy to blame Koo for missing field goals, but you need to not put that in there. When you're in the red area, you got to score.
Yeah, I think that when you look at this game and you look at those situations, sometimes I kind of split it between I hate that the Falcons start slow in some of those areas and get caught off guard. And at the same time, you got to flip it around and say, I'm glad they made the necessary adjustments as coaches and as players to be able to look a lot better in the second half, right? It's kind of all in the same boat. Like, when you start slow, you need to make adjustments, but you hate the fact that you need to make adjustments. And that definitely happened in the back end. Look, I saw numerous people tweeting at me on Sunday kind of pointing at the defense and their inability to get home. I think that has something to do with it. But this loss, aside from some of the other ones we've seen, I don't think you can put this loss on the defense, even though you did have some blown opportunities like that with a guy like MVS coming off the street. It just they were able to play a lot better in the second half, thankfully, and kind of hold serve for the Atlanta Falcons offense to get going.
I want to back it up because you just used the words too slow or took too long, right, to get going. And so that's what Coach Raheem Morris talked about when it came to this team and how they came out to start this game. He spoke with Dave Archer of the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network.
You know, you don't get the results you want, but obviously they outplayed us today. They came out with the increased urgency we talked about. It took us too long to get started. We got going and thought we had a chance to close that game, but they made plays at the end of the game to win it, and they deserved it. Great job by those guys.
Yeah, we talked to Kirk about it as well. We'll hear it at 7 o'clock. I know when we listen to Arch's conversation with him, but Arch asked a similar question, and Kirk made a good point. He goes, I don't – he goes, it all kind of goes together, but it's hard to say we started slow when we had opportunities right there. We just missed them. You know, there's the – I think it's the first drive where he's got Drake, and he just a hair long, and he just couldn't get there. And it was on a third down, and it was just little misses, and it's kind of the same way, you know, when with the field goals this year, they've been little misses where they're pushed just a little bit left or right, and you just can't do it. Like, everyone wants to talk about what the Saints were or weren't. The NFL teams don't, those losing streaks don't. They're not very common to lose that many games in a row, and you're going to get off of it, especially with the – talked about the interim coach bump. Talked about that. They came out. They had nothing to lose. I was surprised they didn't pull more stuff out of the bag with Taysom Hill being the personal protector. There were multiple times that I pointed out to Wes, hey, be careful because there might be a fake coming on here, and the Falcons knew it. The Falcons were leaving their defense in, yep. So they were on their toes. It wasn't – you didn't get out – I don't believe for a second you got out coaching like that. I just think you on the field couldn't execute. When you get inside a first and goal, you can't have it turn into first and 25 because that can't happen. You can't have these big penalties at the most inopportune times.
Yeah.
And you were saved yesterday a few times by the fact that you probably had the best player on the entire field in Bijan Robinson playing.
Yeah, you definitely did. And I'll say this. I knew that this would be a tough game for the Falcons. We talked about it all week last week because we talked about Alvin Kamara and what he was able to do on the field and the fact that the Falcons have struggled really in run defense a lot this season. And could you keep Kamara from taking over this game? That, in the end, was not the story. You actually did a decent job against Alvin Kamara. 17 carries, 55 yards, only 3.2 per carry. He does catch a number of passes out of the backfield, goes over 50 yards receiving. But you just expected Alvin Kamara to be the offense, and that just wasn't the way it planned out. You know, it panned out, even though he was a big part of it. I really thought that you'd see a game where Alvin Kamara had north of 25 carries, and the Falcons could do nothing about it. And yet, when you got to the end of the game, and you look in the stat category, that's just not the way it played out. And kudos to, like we said, some of the changes the Falcons coaching staff made in the second half. In the end, you mentioned it. You have the sack fumble. Which is half on Jake Matthews for getting bull rushed back, half on Kirk Cousins for fumbling and not keeping two hands on the ball. You also have the sack on Caleb McGarry where he and Bijan get kind of tangled up and he falls backwards. And the penalty on Chris Lindstrom, which I know that was talked about on the TV broadcast, where he kind of trips over Caleb McGarry and falls at the feet of the linebacker, and they call, block below the waist or whatever else the call was there on sportsmanlike conduct, and that's a massive penalty. So some unfortunate situations, a bad pick by Kirk at the end of the game, and You add Youngway into that entire mix, and it just ended up being really ugly for a lot of what the Falcons were trying to do.
Yeah, I felt like he forced that ball there to Drake. I think it was not an opportunity, you know, moment where you had to force it. I understand why you throw their second eight, but I mean, I just thought you were just destroying them in the run game. I'd have liked to see that. There was a couple.
You were destroying them in the run game. There's no doubt.
There's a couple instances in this game where you threw when I was like, I don't know if I think I would just keep it on the ground. You're knocking them off the ball. They're pinning their ears back and coming when they have opportunities. And I think you could use that against them. And I thought you did that drive, and I thought there was plenty of time. It just didn't feel like the moment to push the ball and try to just fit it in an area where you didn't have to. That they play, give the Saints, you know, credit. They played good tight covers. They always do. And this is one of those games where styles make the fight.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely did.
They match up well in the secondary the way they want to play. They match up well. But you know, it. Even when you one of your touchdowns came off an explosive play, and give Bijan Robinson all the credit, give Kyle Pitts some credit. Did not get in a lot of action early and ended up making a big play in the game, which led to the Bijan Robinson touchdown. So there was a lot of bad, but there was some good in there as well. I thought the run game, the run defense was as good as that. They probably played their best half of football in the second half of yesterday's game, I thought.
There's no doubt. And when you look at the fact that the Falcons ended up with, 10 minutes more time of possession than the Saints did after the first quarter? At the first quarter, the Falcons did not have the ball. And then somehow on the game, you end up with 10 more minutes. It just tells you how dominant it seemed like the Falcons were on the ground and trying to keep the ball away from, you know, the offense of New Orleans, and they did just that. It's weird, man. It's one of those games where I come away from it, guys, and I was almost sad after the Falcons beat the Saints first time around because of the way they looked. And now I come away from this one going, I don't know how we lost. You know, just bad management, you know, throughout. And obviously the King game is going to stick out. I'm not ready to go in on Youngway, but he's definitely, you know, in the crosshairs, if you will, needing to step up and make some of those kicks.
Yeah, he's won some games, but it's not been a good season. And being 8 of 14 for your last 14 is not good enough. And so it's time to, I think they need to he needs to get with Marquise, and he's going to have to figure out. And I know he is. I know he's working on it. I know it's something he's working to fix, but you can't lose games on the road like that. It's a bad loss when it comes down to it. As much as I'm going to be, you know, I like to be fair when it comes to this team and not overreact, but it is a bad loss. Now, look, the sky's not falling, though. There's no reason why you can't go to Denver and win. There's no reason why you can't get on the bye week, come home, and beat the Chargers. Like, there's no reason why any of your goals that you had last week after beating Dallas aren't still in play. The Bucs are 2.5 to 3 full games behind you because of the tie head-to-head. I don't care who Tampa plays the rest of the season. There's no easy games in the NFL. So stop tweeting me. Stop coming that, oh, well, they have an easy schedule. There is no such thing in the NFL. Yeah. There are games that aren't as hard as others, but they're all hard to win week in and week out. This is the most parity in any sports league in the world is the NFL.
Yeah. Well said, man. Well said.
When we come back here on the morning shift, Miami, things were not good for that city over the weekend at the hands of two Atlanta teams. We'll get to the latest from the MLS and college football headlines on the other side of the morning shift this hour, brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. We'll be right back.
Into the near corner. Amador trying to run it down. That's it! They blow for full time! They blow for full time! Atlanta United has pulled the greatest upset in the history of Major League Soccer! They have knocked down Messi! They have knocked down Miami! Atlanta United is going to the conference semifinals!
I think that pretty much encapsulates the feeling of a victory for Atlanta United. That was Mike Conte on the call along with Jason Longshore as Inter Miami, well, they fall to the Atlanta United 3-2 in an elimination game. And again, this is an Atlanta United team that no one thought they would be in this position. Lots of change throughout the season. firing their head coach, Gonzalo Pineda, and then their interim head coach. Remind me again, Mike, please.
I'm Rob blanking Valentino. Out.
Thank you. Rob Valentino, who has now, I mean, I'm not going to say he should be the head coach or the manager, but I think it seems pretty clear to me, you coach a team through transition and then you lead them well into the postseason now, taking out a messy team in Inter Miami. Just give that man the job.
Yeah.
Well, they're the greatest regular season team in MLS history.
Yeah.
74 points. They're not even close. They have put together multiple players that were international stars on that team. They played dirty. They tried to they cheap shotted our goalie.
Yeah,
which,
that's true.
Which just irritates me to high hell the way they treated Guzan and was allowed to treat him.
Yeah, the referee didn't say anything to anybody else other than Guzan.
It is absolutely just blatant. And then they allowed, they essentially gave them two corners after the stoppage time had blown to
everybody
to
in
do
Atlanta
something.
Going, blow the freaking whistle!
Yeah, including Jason and Mike. And
Jason
and so,
was beside himself.
Yeah. How are they letting him do this?
Beside himself.
I was like, Jason, calm down. No.
Yeah.
No, it was phenomenal. It was great. But, you know, that was my point earlier. An interim coach, you got rid of what your three best players, and then you didn't add a spot where you could have because, you know, it just doesn't make sense. And now you just beat the best team in MLS regular season history.
Blow the freaking whistle.
Thank you, Mike.
No, man, I'm with you. And I don't know if you guys caught it. Arthur Blank, Guzan walks Arthur Blank in the locker room afterwards. He's in attendance for the game and being able to watch Saturday night. I thought that was awesome. And Guzan was, look, Brad Guzan was elite during the series. I think Mike Conte tweeted it out. Brad only made 12 saves in the entire 2018 playoffs. In this series, this three-game series, 16 saves at a 76 save percentage was just unbelievable. Just unbelievable from all accounts. Also from Conte, five different players scoring goals in the series for Atlanta United and five different players having assists, which is insane. And I'm watching this game. I said it to you guys kind of in the crossover. I'm watching this game, and I'm having to watch it on an iPad because I'm around a lot of Bama fans on Saturday. And I just put the iPad down, and the entire time I'm just looking at the iPad. The Bama game is secondary to me at that point, and I'm going, go, go, go! And they're thinking, like, you know, Milroe's running or something, and I'm just screaming at the iPad. I think I made a couple of new Atlanta United fans on Saturday night, but nonetheless, when you pull back ahead, even though there's a flop in the box, just one of the more memorable nights I can think of. I was at Atlanta United's opening game at Georgia Tech, and I've been an Atlanta United fan since the beginning, just – the most memorable night other than the night they win the cup that I can think of as an Atlanta United fan.
Let's get a check on some college football. I think it would be easy for me to say I foresee a lot of changes to come when the next edition of the college football playoff rankings come out because of what went down over the weekend. And we can start with Georgia, the number three team in the land, going in to face Ole Miss. And they did not come out unscathed, falling 28-10. In this one, and this is a game where you saw Jackson Dart, Ole Miss quarterback, lead the game early. Where comes Austin Simmons, who had no problem keeping things going for the Rebels there, and then Dart comes back in, and Ole Miss. You mentioned also, Mike, you talked about it last week, their defensive line,
dude.
How
I tried
nasty
to say,
they were.
Tried to tell y'all, they are unbelievable, Tiff. Unbelievable.
The best defensive line money can buy in college football.
I don't know that that's even true. I don't know that that's even true because I think there are multiple other D-lines in the SEC that are playing to that level. Wow. Texas A&M, Tennessee. Yeah.
But that's the best I've seen a defensive line dominate a game single-handedly because that's what they did against another team that's supposed to be as good as they're supposed to be. Well, let's just say it. Georgia is nowhere near as good up front offensively as they have been in the past. But that's not taking anything away from an Ole Miss team who forced four fumbles, created three turnovers, got five sacks, and nine tackles for loss.
Well, they said that's what they built this team for, right? Yeah, Jackson Dart, I was listening to the broadcast, kind of recruiting guys to come play for them. But you look at the defense, and it was built. Rusty talked about this last week as well. for this Georgia game.
Oh, yeah. The $15 million that they spent helped recruit him as well. I don't think Jackson.
They didn't spend $15 million on the D-line.
Sure,
not on the D-line.
On the team as a whole.
Okay, that's fair.
I'm not saying Jackson Dart is the reason all these guys came and played. I'm sure, yeah, money talks, but basically, I'm just pointing out it was
all hands on deck when
it comes to trying to get some of these players to go to the school.
And let's just call it what it is, money well spent.
Well, it's legal. It's not like it's illegal. I say it as a joke, but it's not. I mean, they Lane Kiffin said, I need this amount of money and these guys to go
to
beat a Georgia.
And so
and
did,
he did.
Yeah, and so did Steve Sarkisian. They've done the right things in the trenches. And you know who Georgia. Their offensive line recruiting, go back 2 and 3 years to what their offensive line recruiting has been, it's not there. Now, Stacey Searles is doing a nice job now, and I think there's a lot to look up to. But when you get hit with injuries and you look at the O-line depth at Georgia, it's just not where you would think for an elite program the way Georgia is at this point.
This is the reality to me of – I was having this conversation with Arch because we got on the plane, and he's like, well, your boy – he's talking about the Florida just got taken to – just
shellac
pound town by Texas. I mean, holy smokes. And I said, well, you got your third string quarterback. And he goes, what do you mean? He's plays for Florida. I go, yeah, he's a redshirt freshman walk on from Yale.
Sure.
And he goes, how is that your third string quarterback at Florida? And I'll tell you, the reality of the situation is, this is the reality of college football.
Yeah, 100%.
You are not stacking 4, 5, and 6 deep at every position anymore in college football at top-tier programs, because when those guys don't play, there's another guy that says, I've got a bag for you. Come play here. You'll compete for a starting job. And guess what? Those guys are that freaking talented that they can go contribute.
It's so interesting because I'm watching this game and I'm watching Lane Kiffin, and he is just, I mean, everything that Ole Miss is doing, I'm like, man, it's just gritty, tough, blue-collar SEC football in the rain. Their biggest crowd of all time in the rain, which was insane. I don't know, though, guys, if I came away from this game feeling better about Lane Kiffin or worse, because I'm watching this team on Saturday going, how did y'all lose to Kentucky? And how did you let the LSU game slip away from you? It's supposed to be the greatest season in Ole Miss history, and they're staring at a regular season where they could easily go 10-2 and still not make the SEC championship game because you lost games you shouldn't have. They had the easiest schedule by far, it seems like, in the SEC. They played the opposite of what Florida was doing. But, you know, I don't want to rain on the parade because this is a moment to take our hats off to Lane Kiffin. I don't know who had a better Saturday. You know, was it Georgia Tech or was it Ole Miss? Because both those teams with marquee wins over top five opponents, and you just feel good about where those programs are headed right now.
You got to feel good about what Georgia Tech did this weekend as well, beating the number 4 team in the land in Miami 28-23. And what, we had Haynes King come back. He had been missing. How many games did he miss before?
Two, I think, full games, Tiff, and at least the bye
week. The bye week, okay.
But I don't know if I think he missed some of another game because the upper body injury
upper
is
body,
what they called
yes.
it.
We do need to spend time, obviously, taking the hats off to Georgia Tech. And I think that the bigger picture as we continue to get into it is going to be, what does this say for Miami? What does this say for Georgia? What does this say for the college football playoff? What does this say for the SEC standings, which is just as muddy as it could possibly be? I think that there's two ways to look at the SEC standings right now. What's going to happen in Tennessee versus Georgia, and will Texas A&M and Texas be an elimination game at the end of the year? That's the first two things you have to kind of knock out. But you get beyond that, guys, and it is just – it's muddied waters. And I don't even think there's any way to even start to project who's going to end up in Atlanta at the end of the season.
Right now, Tennessee is in the best position of any team in the SEC to be in the SEC title game.
8-1 and just beat Mississippi State.
Well, they're going on the road to play Georgia this weekend, so I don't know if that's a great position.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. It is, because you beat Georgia, and you pretty much have secured your spot, because Texas A&M and Texas essentially have what will be an SEC championship elimination game. And in the last week of the season, Thanksgiving weekend.
That's considering they both make it there without losing again.
Well, yes, it is. But then you have, you look at Alabama, they've put themselves squarely back in the race. Because they own the tiebreaker against Georgia, if things were to end and play where both parties win out, they've got that over Georgia, and Georgia would have knocked Tennessee off in that instance.
Yeah, I think that's the scenario.
And they're also going to be higher ranked at this point. Georgia, I give it the AP poll, and I don't know how the college football playoff is what matters the most, but the AP poll did the right thing, and they put Georgia beneath Ole Miss and Alabama squarely behind, and those are the two teams they lost to. We're getting at least three teams in from the SEC, I think.
There's no doubt about it.
Well, tell me how you feel or how the mood was at the party you're at this weekend with Bama demolishing LSU 42-13.
Yeah.
They're now 7-2, so everyone seems kind of backlogged at 7-2 on the year.
Well, it's just interesting because I think a lot of people have wondered throughout this season what the marriage is between Kalen DeBoer and Jalen Milroe, right? At times, he's just thrown the ball a lot, hadn't been that involved in the running game. They added a little wrinkle to one of their plays, which is kind of a quarterback counter G kind of play, but then the quarterback uses the running back as a lead blocker. And LSU they didn't have anything to stop it. They were planning on Jalen Milroe getting the edges. Brian Kelly earlier this week in his press conference almost sounded like he was thumping his chest about Jalen Milroe, saying, hey, you know, last year we didn't really know what he is. This year we definitely do know what he is and what Kalen DeBoer wants from him. And yet the best two games that Jalen Milroe has played at Alabama are against LSU. And this game looked a lot like it did last year when he goes off for like 185 and four touchdowns. You got a lot of the same this weekend. So I think there was a lot of pride in what Alabama was able to do. And then you start looking ahead going, this team is inconsistent. So you got to go on the road to Oklahoma and face Auburn in the Iron Bowl. There will be questions about both those games. But I think for a lot of Bama fans, just feeling good about the win.
Was it as simple as it's bad weather? Let's just simplify, because if you notice, you go back and you watch a lot of the game plan when Milroe took off, they weren't even RPOs.
No,
they weren't even read option. They were just take it.
They added the new wrinkle where it was like, we're going to fake to the running back, but then we're also going to follow the running back. And when Jalen Milroe decided to do that numerous times, the LSU was their heads were spinning.
My favorite, and this is not against this. This is just it could have been anybody. But, you know, you go out and you pay the DC at LSU a ton of money.
I brought him in from Missouri.
After, like, with a 70-yard run, Brian Kelly walks up next to him and looks over. And I don't know what Brian Kelly says, but I can tell you what the DC says. He says, we can't blink and stop him.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know if there's a way to stop that. When he gets going and you use him like that, he is the best player in the country, not named Travis Hunter.
We're sitting here.
How do you not do more of that?
Yeah. When he goes north and south, he's elite. When he's running towards the sideline, I think anybody can stop him, and they have. But when he's going north and south, he's elite.
Well, what went down on Sunday, some missed opportunities. That's what happened when it comes to the Atlanta Falcons and their matchup against the Saints. We'll hear from the QB, Kirk Cousins. On the other side of the morning shift, this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. We'll be back.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.